So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. As I mentioned, I'm telling you, those kids who are in the marching band, they're in good shape. They have to be in good shape because with the kind of workout, and I've kind of admired the tuba players, I think, the most, because carrying those tubas around and marching and high stepping the way they do, it's a remarkable achievement. I want my daughter to play the trumpet, and she wants to play. Oh, Cynthia Schuster says she's a trumpet player too. Did you play in the band? Yeah, no, she didn't play in this UW band. Well, tell you what, if I wish I had played in the band, I surely do, because I'd probably be in better shape than I am right now. And that's what we're going to be talking about: getting in shape, staying in shape. We're going to talk about obesity as an issue with our guest today, Ann Schwartz. Ann is a PhD. She has an associate professor, director of the MS Kinesiology program in the Department of Kinesiology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and joins us from our Milwaukee studios today. So it's great to have her along. And I'm hoping that you'll join in. Does your weight put you in the obese or overweight categories? How does that impact your ability to exercise? How do you try to get or stay fit if you are obese? And what are the biggest obstacles for you? Is it more physical, more emotional? Maybe you have an obese child or a grandchild and want to know how best to help them. Well, I know that Ann Schwartz can be helpful in all of these areas, and so I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And once again, Ann Schwartz with us from our Milwaukee studios. Ann, are you there? I'm not hearing Ann. Well, let's see. Yeah, Ann, are you there? We will get her. It'll work eventually here. I'm going to try one more thing here. Okay, Ann, are you there?
Good morning.
Ah, there we go. Hi.
Oh, great. Okay, well, thank you for having me.
I bet you were having trouble hearing me.
I actually could hear you pretty well, so.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
But I have no knowledge in this area, so.
Well, you do have a lot of knowledge in the exercise and obesity area. You have a lot of experience there in fitness and obesity.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's my field of study. It's what I've been focusing on for the last, I would say, about 10 years.
I kind of wanted to zero in a little bit on people who are obese. I would almost count myself in that category, almost. Why is it important for obese people to begin an exercise routine?
Well, I think it's important not only just for obese and overweight individuals to begin an exercise routine, but for everybody.
Everybody.
Right. And there are so many health benefits that can come from engaging in regular physical activity or exercise. Things such as reductions in your blood pressure if your blood pressure is high, so if you have hypertension. Improvements in your blood cholesterol levels, and particularly the good cholesterol. It helps increase that good cholesterol. It helps with control of diabetes. It helps you control that blood sugar, your blood sugar levels, and it also helps to improve the sensitivity of a hormone called insulin, which is very important in diabetes.
Yeah.
Other things include reductions in the amount of total body fat and the body fat that's contained within your abdominal region. And then there are also other psychological decreased anxiety, decreased rates of depression, improved quality of life. And so it's an important issue for everybody to keep moving, to start moving and keep moving. But then as well,
absolutely,
for those who are obese, it can, even without weight loss, there can be benefits of engaging in regular physical activity.
How can people safely start programs?
That's a great question. And so the first thing that you want to make sure is, if you've not exercised before, is you want to make sure that you're healthy enough to begin an exercise program. And so if you have any type of cardiovascular, metabolic, or pulmonary disease, you want to stop by and see your physician or your healthcare provider and get clearance to begin an exercise program. The one thing that you want to, I think, start out by doing is figuring out something that you are going to enjoy doing. Because when you begin an exercise program, and if your goals are to attain some of those health benefits, then the key is consistency. And so finding something that you can start and that you will want to stick with. So.
And I think... I'm just thinking about myself here. I like to bike. Mm-hmm. I play golf. I like mm-hmm. to walk. Mm-hmm. Play some ball.
Right.
So I think sort of a combination of things kind of works well for me.
Right. And so that's great that you've figured that out for yourself, because you want to do something that you're going to enjoy. Otherwise, if you're not going to enjoy, if it's going to be a chore, if it's going to be work for you, then the likelihood of you sticking with it is not very high.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefits of engaging in multiple activities are great, because you're not only going to get the cardiovascular benefit from doing things like cycling, but then you also get you're going to engage different muscles. And so you're going to get that muscle strengthening benefit from engaging in multiple different types of activities.
Mm-hmm. I was having a friend while we were golfing, actually, and he said, well, his doctor told him that golfing is not a bad exercise. He said it doesn't mm-hmm. get enough credit, the credit that it deserves. And we were figuring it out. We're walking the 18 holes. You probably walk four or five miles anyway while you're swinging
right.
that club around.
Right. And I would absolutely agree. But particularly for those who walk.
Yeah.
And
well,
then
we were walking.
Right. Right. And then if you, even if you carry your clubs on top of that, then that gets to be quite exhausting. I don't know that... I don't golf that much, but when I do, if I go out and I carry my clubs for even 9 holes, I'm tuckered out after that. But you know, it's a different story when you talk about 18 holes of golf and taking a cart, because then you're not necessarily getting the benefits of walking the distance that you walk. Golfing's a great activity, especially if you're going to walk the course.
Yeah, Joe in Franklin has a question for you. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I'm sure your guests will agree that our eating habits are formed early in life. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I've been able to break some of the habits, such as the types of foods I eat. But the one habit I can't break is there's people in China starving. Eat everything on your plate. How do I break it?
Yeah. You know, that's a tough one. I grew up and my parents were the same way. You know, I had to clear my plate. And now I have children. And I'm trying to make a conscious effort of saying, you know, eat only until you're full. And you can leave things on the plate and it's okay. It's important to listen to your body and to slow down when you're eating. I need to clarify, I'm not a nutritionist. So,
yeah.
But, you know, you do need to slow down and listen to your body. And once your body tells you that it's full, then, you know, you want to go ahead and stop. But it's hard. You know, you bring up a really good point, because with many of our dietary habits and many of our exercise habits, they're taught to us through our parents. Our parents serve as role models for us. And if I can turn it to physical activity a little bit, you know, the kids today, in order to help them become more physically active, we have to ask our parents to become really good role models for their mm-hmm. children. But to get back to your question about the starving children in China and clearing your plate, you know, it's one of those things that is going to take a conscious effort to say, you know what, it's okay if I leave a little bit of food on my plate. You know, maybe start a compost pile and then you can turn it back into the earth, you know.
Yeah, and slower eating. I mean, you know, I come from a family of somebody who was telling me on the air not that long ago, they came from a family with five kids. There were five of them, and when the food came out, you know, the first it was a race to get to get your share of the food, and so mm-hmm. she learned to sort of gobble her food down and
right.
eat very quickly, and as you were saying earlier, just a slower eating really does make a difference, I think, as you don't eat beyond being full as often.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the world is a different place now. It's, you know, food is very plentiful and very easy to come by. And so, at least for many people, that's the case.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Marie and Stephen's Point, it's your turn next. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I've got a question about, I recently started an exercise program, and I myself am obese. And but super motivated, and I've been reading about squats as an exercise that can be extremely beneficial, especially mm-hmm. to somebody who is sedentary in their job. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if doing squats while being obese can end up being damaging to the knees, and then also the difference between just a 90-degree squat and then going below parallel. And if
right.
it's possible, should you be doing it? And if it's not, or is it something to be working toward? And is it beneficial?
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you that you have a good amount of motivation and that you've taken the first step to start what it sounds like is a very nice exercise program that includes most likely both cardiovascular and strength training. So that's great. I congratulate you on that. In terms of the squats, the strength in your quadriceps, which is what the squats is going to focus mostly on, is very important. And especially if you do have a sedentary job where you aren't engaging your muscles as much throughout the day. And so strengthening those quadricep muscles are going to help in most of your daily activities. Now, what you want to make sure to do is are you working with a personal trainer?
No, I just recently quit working with a physical therapist for a knee injury, and she introduced squats to me, but I just wanted to, I feel like they are really beneficial, and I just want to be using them in the best way possible in the program.
Absolutely. And so it's important to follow very good form or proper form. And going below a 90-degree angle from your lower leg to your upper leg is probably not advisable.
Okay.
I would recommend that you just go down to the 90 degrees and then come back up after that. And, you know, if you're not real comfortable starting with a freestanding squat, then start leaning against a wall and have your feet out in front of you and kind of slide your back down the wall. And that'll provide you with a little bit of extra support and help you to follow that proper form.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Tina in Madison is curious about the connection between obesity and diabetes. She wonders if you lose weight, will it control your diabetes?
That's a great question. The World Health Organization estimates that about 58% of diabetes cases are directly attributable to excess body weight.
Wow.
And so what we find is that a lot of times when individuals do tend to lose weight, then they can decrease their medication doses. And in some cases end up definitely not needing as much medication as they could before or as they did before. And so there is a connection there. And a lot of the connection tends to focus on issues related to insulin sensitivity, the hormone that helps control your blood sugar. And the beautiful thing about exercise is exercise will improve the ability of insulin to do its job, and it'll also help to get some of the blood sugar out of the bloodstream, which are two of the issues with diabetes that individuals are working to control.
There we go.
So,
and how much should we be all be exercising to sort of to maintain our health? And then maybe how much more do we need to actually lose weight?
Right. And that's a great question. There's been a lot of different recommendations that have come out over the last, 10, 15 years. And most of the recommendations have really focused on physical activity. And physical activity is really any activity that you do that results in energy expenditure. But the recommendations focus on physical activity of a moderate intensity. And so what is recommended if you want to reduce your risk of chronic disease is that you engage in about 30 minutes of moderate intensity activity on most days of the week. So you want to accumulate somewhere around 150 minutes in the week of moderate intensity activity.
Okay.
If you want to help manage your body weight, or if you want to help prevent a gradual increase in body weight, then the 2005 dietary guidelines recommend that you engage in about 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous intensity activity. And then if you are looking to sustain weight loss, then they recommend anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes of moderate intensity activity. The question that I always get next is, well, what do you mean by moderate intensity activity?
And the 60 to 90 minutes, is that per day?
Yeah, that's per day. It's quite a recommendation. But when you think about physical activity isn't the same as exercise. It's you deciding that you're going to take the stairs instead of taking the elevator, and so it can be accumulated throughout the day. Yeah, ideally it would be accumulated in bouts of 10 minutes or more. But it doesn't have to be one big 60 to 90 minute chunk of time, because I don't know many adults who have 60 to 90 minutes to spend to spend being active. But moderate intensity activity, what do we mean by moderate intensity activity? There's a lot of physiological measures that we can take to estimate moderate intensity activity. So, for instance...
Well, wait a minute. Before we go, we'll leave that as a tease. We'll leave that as a tease, Ann, because we need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then Ann Swartz will be back to talk with us more about diet, fitness, and obesity. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Talking today about fitness and obesity with Ann Swartz. Ann is associate professor and director of the MS Kinesiology Program in the Department of Kinesiology at the UW-Milwaukee. She also is co-director of the Physical Activity and Health Research Lab at UW-Milwaukee. And great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. Questions as we move along, as we talk about dealing with... overweight, being overweight, fitness, those kinds of issues. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And just to go back, we were talking before the newscast today about moderate activity. And oftentimes, well, what the heck is moderate activity, people would say. And if you need 60 minutes of moderate activity a week, or a day, I'm sorry, to between 60 and 90 to lose weight, what would you consider moderate activity?
So there's a lot of physiological ways that we can measure the intensity of the activity. But I think one of the best ways for most people is to use something called the talk test. And if you can say 5 words in a row, then you're generally going to be somewhere within moderate intensity activity. If you're struggling to get 5 words in, or, a full sentence, then you're probably exercising a little bit too vigorously. So that's one of the easiest ways to determine the intensity of activity. Otherwise, if individuals are interested in monitoring their heart rate, and I know there's a lot of interest in some of the new gadgets that are out there of using heart rate, you want to use somewhere between 55 to 70% of your age estimated maximal heart rate. And that's an easy thing to calculate. You take your age, you subtract your age from 220. So, I like the talk test.
Yeah, that's that easy. You mentioned gadgets. Pedometers are really popular. Are they useful?
You know, I think they're really useful. Some of my research has used pedometers to help with interventions to increase individuals' physical activity levels. And they do a couple things for you. First of all, they give you a concrete number of how many steps you've taken per day. And so you can look at the pedometer at the end of the day and you can say, you know what, my goal was to take 10,000 steps per day and I didn't quite make it there. So let me think about how I can change my day tomorrow so I can increase my steps. So it gives you
or
some
concrete...
Or
take another walk around the block tonight.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you know, you can check your pedometer throughout the day. You know, at lunchtime you can check it. And, you know, I wear a pedometer and I have a unfortunately pretty sedentary job and I'll check it at lunchtime sometimes and I'll only have accumulated 1,000 steps. And so that's an indication to me that I need to get up and I need to move more and I need to take more breaks from my sedentary activity.
Yeah.
So they're a really useful tool in that manner. There's some nice recommendations that have been put out there. For instance, the 10,000 step recommendation, it's a nice, easy number to remember. And that equates out to somewhere roughly about 5 miles of walking in a day. Mm-hmm. So there's about 2,000 steps in a mile. But yeah, there's, I find that the pedometers are very useful if you get a nice high quality pedometer that is accurate.
Yeah, well, that's
because
the
there
thing.
Are some.
What's mm-hmm. the price? I mean, what, you know, is there a price range where you say, okay, anything below that, you're maybe not.
Right. Yeah. It depends on the features that you want on the pedometer. If you just want steps, there's Yamax, Y-A-M-A-X, makes a really nice, inexpensive pedometer, $12 approximately for just a step counter. There are newer pedometers that will account for the amount of time that you spend in more of a moderate intensity. There are ones that will provide you with an estimate of how many calories you burned. In general, the information that even the highest quality pedometer will provide you on calories burned, it's not real super. And so I wouldn't use pedometers for that. I would use pedometers to track the number of steps that you take.
So that Yamax might be just fine.
Yeah, yeah.
For $12.
You know, right. And that's what I use is one that just gives me steps and it provides me with the motivation that I need. It provides me with the feedback that I need. And it keeps me on track.
Bob wrote in to say, I guess to me, he said, Larry, if you're only walking 4 to 5 miles when you play golf, you're hitting the ball too straight.
Well, you should think about wearing a pedometer the next time you go out. And then you could quantify that.
Actually, I've got to put that would be the thing to do, put a pedometer on the next time I play. I actually do hit reasonably straight, but not always, like everybody, you know, once in a while things go astray. Judy.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would definitely accumulate way more than 4 to 5 miles.
Oh boy, Judy in Green Bay up next with a question. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have an idea for the gentleman who called about the thing about cleaning your plate. I'm older than he is and my mother was always think of all the hungry starving children in Europe. That was World War II.
Mm.
We went in our home to 7-inch plates, used to be called dessert plates or salad plates. And that way, when you have a smaller plate, you cannot put as much on it. Of course, you can always go back for seconds, but they have increased the size of dinner plates nowadays, too, to much larger than they used to be 30 and 40 years ago. So that would be my suggestion to help him clean his plate.
Yeah, good idea, Anne.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea, and you're exactly right that dinner plates have increased in size, and I think most of us do feel like we have to fill up our plate. The other recommendation that one of my friends who's a nutritionist has stated is if you do feel like you have to fill up your plate, fill it up with more vegetables. Mm-hmm. Have the vegetables take up about 50% or more of the plate, and then there won't be as many calories in the food that you eat.
Well, my my wife was at a Zumba class last night for the first time. She went with a friend and absolutely loved it. 45 minutes of pretty strenuous activity. Have you done it?
I personally have not done Zumba, but I know my mother loves it. I have friends who love it. There is a large following to Zumba, and everybody who has done Zumba has had the same experience. They just love it. They had fun. And,
yeah, it was
and
a
that's,
lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's what I love about Zumba is that people enjoy it, and so people are more likely to go back and to continue to do it and to create a habit so that they're consistent with their activity.
Yeah, and that's a nice thing once a week or so. It's a different kind of exercise, one that you might look forward to. Yeah.
Right, and it's also a very social exercise, and you create a network of people who you know and people who are experiencing similar things, and so then you have a great network to ask questions to get support from. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, my wife's a size 4, so she's...
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
She's... I don't know that she needs a whole lot more exercise, but in the meantime, our 8-year-old daughter and I went to her favorite... a place to eat, which is a Chinese buffet place, last night. Well, while the wife is out doing the Zumba, we are going to a buffet to dine. And so when we finished with the buffet, which we I took some of your advice and was using vegetables, leaning more heavily on the vegetables than other things. But then afterwards, we spent an hour walking through the neighborhood and hitting on a couple of the places that have swings and so forth to play,
which is that's really great, because it's so important, I think, for children to see value in being physically active, and the best people that they learn that from is their parents. And so instead of sitting down and watching television together, or instead of going to a movie together, you chose to engage in an active behavior together, which I think is great, because those are the things that your daughter is going to remember and that she's going to then incorporate into her life, because we know that active children tend to become active adults.
Yeah. I have a stopwatch as part of my phone. And so she said, well, how long do you think it'll take me to run to, and she'll point to some distant thing in the park, and I'll say, I don't know. I think it'll take 50 seconds. She says, I can do it faster, and then so I time her, and so she runs, and then I kind of jog after her, trying to keep
right.
up.
Right.
So anyway, that she just loves doing that. It's so much fun.
Right. Yeah. And it's, it's fun for you too.
Oh, it's
fun for
me.
It gets you to do things. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and regularly play tag with them, and, games that I haven't played in years, and they're so fun. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, Judy and Menasha is up next. Let's go there. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I want to share my story, my experience. I've been obese all my life as an adult, between 200 and my highest was over 300. And I tried every diet, and that's how my weight went up and up. And I finally found myself in Overeaters Anonymous, and it was that support that helped me realize that and really look at the food I was eating. And what I discovered is that I am addicted to sugar, just as if somebody is addicted to alcohol or any other substance. And once I put it in my body, that chemical reaction happens. And there were several different books I read. One was An End to Overeating, written by a doctor. And it talks about how so many people in our society are addicted to sugar, that or salt or oil. And once you put it in your body, the chemical reaction happens. And what that did for me is it made me go, oh, my gosh, my fault that I'm obese. Because I would eat, I'd try diets, but the minute I put sugar back into my body, I couldn't stop eating it. And so through a whole process, I now weigh like 133 pounds. And
That's fantastic.
I started this a little over 2 years ago. And The best advice I ever got was from a woman who had the same experience as me, and she was became my sponsor in OA. And she said, in the beginning, she was like, don't worry about exercise. I was like, what about exercise? And she said, just get your food straight. Just think about, you know, just one day at a time, you know, and it's, I call it disciplined eating, and I weigh and measure everything. I call in my food every day. But, you know, if that's what it's going to take for me to be healthy, and I mean, my entire life has changed. And, I mean, I can't even express how much happier I am. And it's just this miracle. I'm a walking miracle. People see me, and they're like, oh, my gosh. You know, and I'm actually visiting Wisconsin right now, working here for a little bit. And I see people, and it's just, like, amazing. You know, and then it's a whole brain thing for me to wrap around, you know, my whole new body. And then one other point, you talked about diabetes, is that my wife also is has an eating disorder. And, you know, I look at it as a disease, just like any other disease people have. And she was on over 20 different medications. She was diabetic. She is off of everything. Her diabetes is reversed. She's, you know, I just can't say enough about getting the support and emotional help that you need for this disease, which is obesity. And thank you for letting me tell my story.
No, thank you for calling. And go ahead.
It's a fantastic story. Two great success stories. It's wonderful to hear. I think you bring up some really interesting points. Research study, a long-going research study, the National Weight Control Registry, where they will track people who have lost 30 pounds or more of body weight and have kept it off for at least a year. And a recent report that they put out had talked about the 7 habits of successful weight loss maintainers. And some of the things that she just pointed out are some of the key habits that these individuals engage in, such as consistency with relatively little food variety, same pattern, no splurging, being very meticulous with weighing out food and knowing exactly what they're putting in their mouths, avoiding emotional eating, monitoring themselves, getting the social support that they need. But she also brought up a really interesting point about tackling diet prior to tackling exercise. The one thing that's really important, I think, to realize is everybody's different, and everybody has to tackle their challenges in the way that works for them. But in terms of weight loss, the best way to help you lose weight is really to modify your diet. The amount of calories that you're going to burn walking a mile is approximately about 100. So it's not going to be it's not going to create a huge caloric deficit for you. But what it does is it will help you improve your overall health in addition to aiding in that weight loss. And where the exercise really becomes important is when you're trying to maintain that weight that you've lost. Then that's one of the key coming data from this National Weight Control Registry. They state that that's one of the key variables in helping people maintain their weight loss is engaging in regular physical activity.
Yeah. We had a listener email who says, I'm a 48-year-old female. For the last 5 weeks, I have faithfully kept my calorie intake under 1,200 a day. And for 6 days a week, I've done 20 to 30 minutes of aerobic activity. I also do 5 to 20 minutes of lightweight exercises. To date, in these 5 weeks, I have gained 2 pounds and haven't lost a single inch off any part of my body. I'm on medication for underactive thyroid. What more could I do?
So I think one thing that I would recommend is that she definitely talks with her physician because she is on her medication for her underactive thyroid. But the other thing that is important for her to take account of is what the results are that she's looking at. She's looking at the scale, and she needs to also consider other things like her clothing size and whether her clothing is fitting. Her clothing is getting looser, her pants are getting looser, As well as, you know, whether or not her activities of daily living are becoming easier for her to do. Is it easier for you to carry in, you know, all those bags of groceries from the grocery store, or, you know, pick up your children? So I would encourage you not to focus solely on the number on the scale, but also focus on the other benefits that are coming along with being with engaging in that type of routine. 5 weeks it's great to have that accomplishment for 5 weeks, because that's a big undertaking. And I hope that she doesn't get discouraged by the number on the scale, and she continues in her efforts, because I think she will in time see some really good benefits from that.
We had Carrie, who sent a note on Facebook, who says, "My whole life I've struggled with my weight. I do well for a while when working at losing weight, including exercise and watching what I eat. I find that after 6 to 8 months of, in quotes, being good, I usually find myself so stressed out about making sure I get in all my exercise and don't eat what's not good for me that I let myself slide back into old habits and undo all the progress I've made. My question is, how do you stay motivated and not let the stress of it all get to you?"
And that is a fantastic question. The challenge that we have when we start any type of lifestyle change is we feel like it needs to be a very significant lifestyle change. And so, you know, it sounds like she's made some really great strides, but then she was not necessarily comfortable with the changes that she had made, and committing to the amount of exercise or the diet that she had made. And so then she regresses back. And so I would encourage her that maybe think about not taking on such as large of goals as she did before, so that she can incorporate these changes into her life and be consistent. Because the key to weight loss and maintenance of weight loss is really consistency. And so I encourage her to find the habits that she can be consistent with and continue to live with as she continues during her life. But that brings us back to the recommendations that we had been talking about earlier, the 30 minutes if you want cardiovascular benefits or health benefits, and then all the way up to 90 minutes. The message that I would really like to get across is that doing something is better than doing nothing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's small steps, if it's, you know, breaking up if you're in a sedentary job and you sit for 8 hours, if it's getting up once every hour and taking a 5-minute walk, you know, around your office or something like that, making those small steps can have a significant impact. And then it's making that progression to being more and more physically active.
Yeah. And you research this, do you not, in your lab?
I do. Yes, I do. I do. We actually just finished collecting some data on a really interesting study where we, instead of looking at physical activity, we examined the amount of time that people spend being sedentary. Because on average, Americans spend anywhere from 8 to 9 hours being sedentary on a daily basis of their waking hours. And so so the majority of our day is sedentary. And the question is then, within the public health research, is for those people who are sedentary for 9 hours of the day, is that 30 minutes of activity enough for them to counteract all the sedentary behavior? And we don't know the answer to that yet, but there's a lot of interesting research that's going on. But what we actually did is we took people who were sedentary, who worked in offices at the university, and they would sit on average for 6 to 8 hours a day. And we asked them to get up for 5 minutes every hour. And we measured the amount of calories that they burned while they did that. And what we found is that over the course of a 6-hour day, they burned an additional 132 calories, which may not sound well.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I was happy with that.
Yeah, that's 650 calories a week.
Right, exactly. And the really great public health message of this is that there's a researcher in Colorado, a very well regarded researcher, who has postulated that the rise in levels of obesity that we've seen over the last couple decades has really been due to an imbalance of only about 100 calories a day. And so if we can counteract that imbalance by just getting up and walking 5 minutes every hour, you know, that's a pretty powerful message.
Yeah. Anne, thank you so much. Can you come back and be with us again?
I would love to. It was great fun.
It was a lot of fun. Anne Swartz, our guest, associate professor, director of MS kinesiology programs at the UW-Milwaukee. We will have her back. Thank you for listening.